morning, my friends, and welcome to yet another incredible installment of Weekend Update. From very high above all the puerile and vacuous forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, firmly ensconced behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone and broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to a special presentation of Cowboy State Politics. Longtime listeners of the program will remember a series I started way back in the first season of Cowboy State Politics entitled Escape from Communism. The first guest on that series of programs was a guy named Ovi Muntean, who escaped communist Romania back in the 1980s. And when I first met him, I became enthralled finding immigrants that had moved to the United States from communist countries. It doesn't really matter which communist country they came from. All immigrants from communist countries have an intriguing story to tell, as well as a dire warning for all of us about the dangers of socialism and communism. And the reason I bring these stories to you is we are living in a time when people are going to our universities and extolling the virtues of socialism. There aren't any, by the way. Communism and socialism is the leading cause of death worldwide, and you can probably blame the deaths of at least 30 million people on the mistaken ideas of Karl Marx and his acolytes. If you want to know the peril that we're in, go back and read the 10 planks of communism listed in the Communist Manifesto, and what you'll find is that the United States of America has accomplished, if not all, most of them. Members of the media think that socialism and eventually communism is a fantastic idea because, of course, everything will be fair and everybody will get what they need. And more importantly, everyone will pay their fair share. The truth is that no one will have what they need. No one will be able to pay their fair share because no one will have any money. And when the government runs out of money under communism and socialism, they will take what they can't have monetarily through blood and death. However dire of a picture that paints for you, and it most definitely is, there is an upside, a shiny spot, if you will, to all of these stories that I've brought you about escaping communism. And that is what it means to all of these immigrants to be an American. That America, as the shining city on the hill, is still very much an idea that is alive across the world. And it's important for all of us to remember that feeling. So this morning, I bring you the story of Peter Vodenka, who escaped communist Czechoslovakia in the 1980s. It was impossible for him and his family to leave Czechoslovakia directly to the United States. So he ended up crossing the border of Czechoslovakia into Yugoslavia, another communist country, but with fewer restrictions on travel. From there, by way of a refugee camp in Germany, he, his wife, and his two young children finally made it to America. North Dakota, of all places, to be precise. As far as communist countries go, Czechoslovakia was probably one of the better ones. Still communist, still terrible, still a horror show of a human tragedy, but a little bit better than the rest of them. He's written a book about his family's experience. It's called Journey for Freedom. Just wait until you hear how Peter talks about our flag. If it doesn't make that heart in your chest pound with pride, I don't know what will. This morning's special presentation is brought to you by New Trend Hats. It's about to get cold out there, my friends, and you definitely want to make sure that your ears are nice and toasty warm. Go to newtrendhats.com. They've got a wide variety of hats for both men and women, and you're sure to find one to fit your particular style and one that'll keep the top of your head nice and warm. That's newtrendhats.com. If you're thinking of buying or selling property, then you should really give Rebecca Bextel at Compass Real Estate a call. Last year, she sold approximately $25 million worth of property. And get this, she's been known to talk buyers out of a particular property simply because it didn't meet their needs. It's so important to have a real estate agent that you can trust. And Rebecca Bextell is definitely that person. So give her a call. Her phone number is 307-699-3519. One more time. That's 307-699-3519. And now, Cowboy State Politics, Escape from Communism, Volume 3. Peter Vodinka is the author of Journey for Freedom. It's a book about his journey from a communist country to his freedom in the United States. Peter, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dave. Nice to be here.
Tell me about your book.
Well, the book started it, I was born in communist country of Czechoslovakia and came to America, escaped from communism, and living in America for almost 40 years now. And then you talk to people, and most of us don't remember our relatives or ancestors, usually even as close as to grandparents. We know about our parents, but we don't know about grandparents most of the time. And I personally don't know when three of my four grandparents are even buried.
Oh, wow.
And so when we were living in, we came to America living over here, of course, my kids were small and they grew up and become parents themselves. And now I have the grandchildren in America, which were born in America, and they have the American father. And so I'm thinking, I need to write our story. Why we escaped from communism, what was our motivation, how it actually worked out, and all this other stuff, because, you know, eventually I'm going to be gone, and the kids will not know what really is going on. So I want them to know what happened, and how it happened, and why it happened, and all this other stuff. So I start writing the memoirs, pretty much. Just writing how we went, and all the other stuff, and as I'm doing it, suddenly it started looking like a book. And people were telling me, for 20 years, you need to write the book. People in America need to hear your story. And for 20 years, I was saying, yeah, sure, you know, how am I going to write the book? I don't even speak proper English, you know. And then I have a friend, and she said, I'll help you with it. So she was kind of translated my English into better English. And so eventually we end up writing the book.
Americans, by and large, don't quite understand what communism is.
Right.
I mean, we have people going to college now. We have college professors that are teaching that communism is a better form of government
right.
than the one that we have. In fact, at our own university, recently, there was a sponsored speaker that came to campus, and he gave a talk on why communism is fabulous.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So I guess my first question for you is, you know, and I understand it was a long time ago, but when you first set foot in America, what's the number one thing that you remember?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. You know, when I grew up in Czechoslovakia, I was dreaming about America. I was wishing and hoping and praying that one day I'm going to go to America. And the first thing was when we were flying, finally we are flying to America on the airplane, and we are flying from Frankfurt in Germany to New York City. And I look out of window, and I saw the Statue of Liberty. And it was standing over there right underneath my window. Since then, I flew through New York City many times. Not once I was able to see it from the airplane. And so that was kind of like welcoming, you know, like immigrants 100 years ago were coming and stuff. So it was kind of symbolic, interesting thing. But what I remember in America was everything worked somehow. You know, somebody was waiting. We didn't speak English. Our possession was, you know, a couple suitcases in our hands and two little children which didn't speak English also. And in communism, nothing works. Nothing works. And suddenly in America, everything was working. There was somebody waiting on the airplane, at the airport, and took us because our connection flight from New York City wasn't until next day. So somebody was there waiting for us, took us to the airport, to the hotel. You know, then we were in the hotel, we ate over there, and then somebody took us back to the airport again. And everything in America works, and everything is easy. Everything has its own system, and everything flows. Nothing really is a big problem over here. You know, I, for example, work in construction. I end up owning a construction company. You know, still in America, if you need a permit, You apply, you fill out permit application, you send it to the, you know, city hall or whenever it needs to go, and sometimes they give you permit over the counter. Sometimes they, you know, process it, look at the blueprints, approve it, and then they send you paper permit later. In communism, it doesn't work that way. If you want to build stupid one-stall garage, it's one-stall garage to your house, you have to go through bureaucracy behind you believe. And unless you bribe people along the way, you're never going to get it done. And even if you're bribing the people, it's going to take 6 months, 8 months, years before you get permit to build a single stall garage, something really simple structural. So in America, everything works. The times are changing now, and stuff is starting not to work. Lots of the stuff is not working anymore. It's more complicated. It's more difficult. But still, you know, still we are so far ahead of everything what is out there. And that was the first thing I noticed in America. Everything flowed, everything works, everything was taken care of, everything just people help, you know, and stuff. So,
as far as communist countries go, and I mean, it's the bar is not set very high, but as far as communist countries go, Czechoslovakia was probably one of the better ones.
Yes.
But it's still communism.
Yes.
Could you explain for me, and I know that this is a broad question, but could you just give my listeners an idea of what living under communist Czechoslovakia was like? I mean, your day-to-day life.
Right. You know, one thing which is difficult to live under communism is because communist government is always afraid it's going to get overthrown somehow, that people planning against it and stuff. So they're locking everything up. So everything is under control. Everything is under check. So in order to, in normal life, you know, you, of course, you go to school, like you go over here, and then you find a job, which that wasn't that simple also. Maybe that's, maybe a little bit later on, we can talk about that. But then you become adult, you have the job. But communists have informants throughout the population. The communists have three powers of control, military, police, and secret police. Military people and police, they wear a uniform. We know who they are. Secret police, they didn't. They were in the civilian clothes. They were around us. They are watching. We knew and we felt that we are being watched. We knew that we are being listened. You talk to somebody and there is somebody who is listening to you. You don't know who these people are, but you are constantly watched. And so what they did is, for example, if you have, let's say you have town, small town with 20 houses. And if 20 houses people live over there, the towns were sectioned into small areas and there was somebody who was working for secret police who was watching the neighbors. So he might be watching five houses around him, okay, and report on those people, watching them if they're doing something unusual. Now suddenly, because like I said, communists were really suspicious all the time and really nervous. So they need to know what everybody is doing so that one person is watching his neighbors. And if one of them start doing something slightly unusual, then he's going to get reported to secret police. Now the secret police is going to watch that person, even the family, even more. And they actually have the categories which were categorized by colors, right? So if you did nothing and you're living normal life, if you are not danger person, you are in blue category. Then if you need to be watched a little bit closer, you are in orange category. And if you need to watch totally close, then you are in the red category. And now if you were in the red category, and of course you didn't know any of this stuff. We didn't know anything. I find all this out after we escape. If you are in the red category, now you are being watched by secret police themselves in the detail. They always have somebody following you, watching you, and stuff like that. So that's how the life was. We were always know that somebody's watching, somebody's listening. And, you know, many times, you know, in communism, you don't have too much fun time. Life was difficult, everything was difficult. So our pastime was drinking, more or less. People made the excuses to celebrate. So everybody, families are celebrating stuff together. But many times if you go and you start drinking a little bit, your mind, you lose the defense, kind of. And maybe you start saying stuff which you wouldn't normally, and then you wake up next morning in the cold sweat thinking, oh, yes, you know, and you are scared what you were saying the night before, and now you are expecting that maybe they're going to come and haul you away, knock on the door.
What would happen to you if you said something critical of the government?
Well, you just disappear. Many times they haul you away and they take you to the prison. And if you say something critical of government, you become political criminal, right? Political criminals to communists were the worst sort of criminals. Never mind murderers and rapists, right? The political criminals were most dangerous to them. So they haul you away, and then you usually end up in the gulags, war camps, and those were usually in uranium mines because Czechoslovakia is rich in uranium. So you were mining uranium with bare hands, or you could be executed. But they didn't, you know, play around with, yeah, you go to the jail for weekends and then you go on work relief and stuff like that. Now, you did anything and it's 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years life or death. So they didn't play around at all. And they have, believe it or not, they have the law that you can be persecuted for your thoughts. Not just for what you said, and not just what you did.
How do they police that?
Well, they police that way that they decided if you need to be taken care of because somehow they need to teach you a lesson or they need to use you as an example because you are not really a trusted person. They arrested you and they says, well, we know that you were planning blow up the bridge. You were planning to spy for the West, overthrow the government. And you were persecuted after you just actually did the crime, really. So for blowing up the bridge, that would be 20 years in the prison. So go to the prison because they says they know that you were thinking that.
The last time we spoke, you had mentioned that prison sentences aren't like 30 days,
right?
You know, 90 days in jail. It was 10 years, 20 years, life in prison. So talk to me about religion. You know, I have a couple friends that have immigrated here from other communist countries. Mm-hmm. Very soon, you're going to meet one at our event.
Okay.
But he tells a story of where they would have to pass just little sheets of paper out of the Bible.
Okay.
That it was a crime for them to be caught, you know, doing anything of a Christian, you know, nature.
Right.
Talk to me about that. How would the Czechoslovakians deal with that?
Well, Czechoslovakia dealt with religion pretty much like any other communist country. They hated religion. They didn't people to believe in God. They were teaching us kids in the school that God doesn't exist. And the people who might want to go to church are crazy. Right? So they were afraid of any people being together in any bigger group, because they always think that they are going to plot against them. So they didn't want to have 50 people in the church setting because people in the church are like-minded. They believe in the same thing and they are like-minded. And because they believe in God, that they might be more daring to do other stuff than if they didn't believe in God. So they pretty much tore the churches down. Only churches which were left in Czechoslovakia were the Catholic churches. I guess the Catholic religion was too big. If they start tearing those churches down, it would make them look bad about the world. But like I said, they teach us to ridicule the people who might go to church. So there, for example, one of my aunts was Baptist. And she couldn't go to church because all Baptist church were thrown down. So they were meeting in somebody's house or somebody's apartment where, you know, priest comes in the civilian clothes and there might be 5, 6, 7 people over there and they are doing the service, you know, just in the private, secretly. And if they were caught, the priest or preacher or minister or whoever would be that, he would be in the gulags. Because, you know, when I was saying that political criminals were biggest sort of the criminals, the war camps, the uranium mines were full of the bad criminals. They were preachers, priests, they were doctors, they were professors. The intelligence of the nation was sitting and rotting in the uranium mines because intelligent people can think for themselves. They don't follow, they are not like sheep that much. So those people were automatically dangerous that are communists because they can think on their own and they are smarter. They can see through the lies and through the terror which that system brings in. So that's what it was. You know, and also another law which they have. In America, we have the United States Constitution, right? Which is, those are the God's right which Constitution is saying and give and explain to us. One of the right is freedom of assembly. No, it was illegal to assembly under communism. If you are more than six people, they can come and haul you all to the prison, just because, unless you were family members, because you were illegally assembling. So therefore, it gave them right to burst into anybody's house if there were more people, like I was saying, they were doing service in private, or even burst in the church if they really wanted to, and haul all 20 people away, which might be there. And so it was illegal. Assembly was illegal.
We'll get back to Escape from Communism, Volume 3, in just a second. But first, we've got to find a way to pay for all of this stuff. I know, an obscene profit timeout. This special presentation of Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by Morton Buildings. If you're in the market for an outbuilding or a garage or a barn or maybe a roping arena or even a giant warehouse for your business, the two guys you need to talk to are Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings. Their phone number is 307-674-2532. They're the experts in metal building construction. They've been doing it longer than anybody else around, and they definitely do a much better job than anybody else. So it doesn't matter what type of building you've been thinking about, give Nick and Jesse a call and tell them what you've got in mind, and they'll handle all the details. Again, their phone number is 307-674-2532. It's Saturday. The time when I mysteriously wake up and think only about hot wings. Hot wings from the Wing It food truck. They make the most incredible hot wings in the state of Wyoming. I personally recommend the garlic parmesan wings. They're incredible. Now, the way that you can figure out where this truck is going to be is go to their Facebook page, The Wing It Food Truck, and there you'll find their weekly schedule so you can figure out exactly where that truck is going to be and plan your entire week around it. That's The Wing It Food Truck. And now, back to our conversation with author of the book, Escape from Communism, Peter Vedenka. Every time I've seen you, which is admittedly not that many times, you're always wearing an American flag.
Yes.
What does the American flag mean to you?
Well, American flag is really big symbol for freedom. I knew America. I wasn't born in America. This American flag wasn't my flag, but I knew how it looked like. I see it during the Olympic Games, you know, or that different world competition when you have the all different nations' flags over there. And the American flag is always the most pretty one. And it's always the more meaningful than anything else. Everybody can see that. But it was the American flag. Well, since we escaped, it came over here. Now it's our flag also. We can look at the American flag and say, this is my flag now. And if somebody sings the, you know, Star Spangled Banners, they playing my anthem. It wasn't my time before, but it's not my anthem. And 40 years later, if I go to some sport event or something happening somewhere and somebody singing the Star Spangled Banner, I still have tears in my eyes now. Still, this long, I still have tears in my eyes. Because like I said, I wasn't born over here. I risked my life and my family and my children to be able to call that my flag and call that my anthem.
So you didn't speak English when you arrived here.
Right.
And you've got your wife and your two children.
Yes.
How did you get along? I mean, where did you start? I mean, did you just start learning how to speak English, or was it an organic thing?
Well, it was pretty much organic thing, mostly communicate with the people. We were sponsored because we were in a refugee camp after we escaped across the border. We were in a refugee camp, and we have to go through process to come to America. And you could be, I mean, we have to apply, and this was long process, and have interview with U.S. Counsel, and we could be dismissed. I mean, we could not be, you know, it would happen that they didn't approve you. Anyway, so when we come to America from refugee camp, we end up in a small town in North Dakota. The church sponsored us.
Of all places.
Of all places. And so we were learning English just by living our life. There was one lady who was trying to teach us English, but she didn't speak Czech. But it really helped because she had different books. She was a former teacher, and she knew how to deal with this. So she found the books which might have picture of the cat, and it's a cat underneath. And she was telling us, teaching us to remember what cat is, or dog, or house, or, you know, simple stuff. But it really helped. And but as we are living our life over there, we communicating with the people, and eventually you start learning English.
How difficult was it to become a United States citizen?
That was not easy. First, you have to live over here at least 5 years, and you have to be here legally. Because we were approved by council when we came to America, we have green cards and we have social security numbers, so we could start working right away, which is the most important thing. You cannot build your life if you cannot work. So, but after 5 years, you are allowed to take the citizenship test. The test was not easy. We have to study for it and remember that. And the questions which were over there, you know, anything from structure of the government, you know, of three different branches of government, what is their job, each of the branch, about different presidents, who was the 13 presidents, for example.
I probably couldn't tell you that.
Right. Which president is on which dollar bill or on the bills. There is no way we would pass it unless we study for it. And so it wasn't easy, but if you study, you know, you learn, and we both, my wife and I, we passed it right away on the first try. And so eventually we went through the, you know, ceremony and became citizens of the United States.
I think I told you one of my favorite days at the U.S. Capitol is when they have the citizenship ceremony.
Yes.
And it's amazing watching people that have just become American citizens,
right,
walk into the chamber and, you know, just the look on their faces. And I remember the first time I saw it, they're all holding these little pin flag American flags.
Yes.
And what struck me is I would look at those and say, well, you know, that's a flag that you hold at a parade.
Right, right.
You know, I wouldn't think that much about it. Of course, I would never, you know, let it touch the ground or anything.
Right.
But it really wouldn't be that important. But looking at those folks who had just become American citizens, that was their flag.
Right.
And I bet you money,
right,
that each and every one of them still has it.
Right, right.
So given everything you just told me, what do you think about our current state of immigration, millions of people coming across the border? What are your thoughts on that?
It's horrible. It's dangerous. It's destructive. It damages this country. It damages the life over here. It brings the inflation and everything else. I'm strongly against the illegal immigration. I am for legal immigration. We all talk about that America was built on the immigration, right? Most of the Americans came from the Europe, pretty much.
Legally.
Immigration. But that was legal immigration. And like I said, we were, even those, we escaped in 1983, and we were in a refugee camp. And after you do through your process, the final step, after you fill out the paperwork and you have to write your life history, what was happening to you in the Czech, how your life went, it was translated and sent over to U.S. Counsel. And then U.S. Counsel calls you for interview. And he even denies your application or he accepts your application. In my case, my family case, we got accepted right away. But we were in that refugee camp and there were people there for 2 years already.
Wow.
They were getting denied entrance to America. So they apply again and denied again. They apply to Canada, got denied. Apply for Australia, got denied. So people were getting denied, some of them for 2 years. And we didn't know what was going on, but there must be something in their background, which obviously making the, and that was the United States Council or Australian Council or whatever, that was their decision who they gonna deny it or not. And so you really have to have good background and in order to get, you know, accepted. Like I said, there were people there for 2 years. There were people who committed suicide in that refugee camp because none of us could go back, really. And if you cannot go, if you cannot pass on, you cannot build your life. When we were in that refugee camp, we were free. We could go out of the camp. We could find the work. You know, we could do everything else. But you cannot build your life in the refugee camp. You're living between the two worlds. You're spinning your wheels. And you cannot start to build your life in the refugee camp. So for some people, every morning they woke up with the hope, today is the day and my paperwork is gonna come through. And every night that hope died. So after 2 years or so, someone didn't make it. Some of them turned into alcoholism. Some of them, there was few cases when they killed themselves.
Last question. You mentioned earlier in the interview that there are college professors teaching communism. There are many people that I know that I've had arguments with that claim that socialism and communism is a better form of government, that it's more fair,
right,
that it's, you know, everybody has what they need. What would you say to those people?
Well, those people have no clue what's going on. First, they do not understand, obviously, what capitalism, communism, and socialism is. Because if country starts, any country can, no country, no society, no new stuff can start as a communist or socialist. Everything what starts new starts as a capitalism. You know, when first immigrants came to America on the Mayflower in the 1620s, you know, there was no stores, there were no hospitals, there was nothing. They were just the group of the people. Well, and they start building their life. Right, and they start building their life. But one guy, you know, there is farmers, most of them start farming because they need to have food, right? They start farming. Well, and then one guy, for example, come out with metal plow because they have the wooden plows with they hit the rock, it break rock and stuff like that. Somebody come building the metal plow. It was incredible adventure. They could plow four times as much as they could before. And that plow didn't break down. So now all the farmers who see it want to have that plow. So now it's demand, right? Now he's building now he has to hire employees to keep up his demand. The farmers can work a lot more land now, and they can hire the employees also, or they can start selling their stuff because they have more than what they need for themselves. That's capitalism, right? That's national evolution. And the capitalism go, and America is the pretty much youngest country in the entire world, right? We are, 400 years old approximately. And it became the most technological advanced and free country of all, right? Well, now everything in America flows, like I said, the capitalism, it's free enterprise, it's competition, right? Capitalism, so everything is working. And then the socialism come in. Socialism cannot come in and start it. It doesn't work. They can take the country which already exists or system which already exists and they can change it into socialism. But like Margaret Thatcher said, problem with socialism is that government eventually run out of people's money. And when that happened, now the government changed into communism. That's forced dictatorship. Communism is just different, better, easier accepted word for dictatorship. We know dictators around the world in different countries, but communism is government dictatorship. It's not one person, but it's whole government, which is dictatorship. And so it's to change this, what we have over here, which we prove in America was proof that free enterprise and competition and capitalism is the best system in the world because we excel from anybody else. And for first 150 years, we had no government over here. There was no government. And people were building their lives and everything, building the country, everything was working. And what happened with capitalism, like I said, with the system is that in the capitalism, everything works. People produce, businesses produce. If they don't produce, then they they cannot work, right? Because somebody is going to take them over or sell better product and stuff. Well, problem is, then socialism come next. And because socialism cannot work forever, so it changes it in communism. And in communism, nothing works. So what happened, which happened in the Europe, which happened in the Russia. In Russia, after 70 years, there was communism for 70 years. In the Eastern Europe, it was 40 years. After the time, they run out of money. The whole countries go bankrupt because they don't know. We were working, but we are trying to work as little as we can because that way we felt that we're giving it back to, you know, hurting communists somehow. So the communism doesn't work. They eventually run out of money. Nobody's making profit. You know, they take money from here and put them over here. Nothing works. So eventually the countries go bankrupt. And that's what happened over here in the Europe. The Ronald Reagan, he sped it up. He sped it up by probably 2, 3, 4 years. But it was going to happen anyway. The collapse of communism was going to happen anyway because, like I said, they run out of money.
Yeah, it's a natural progression.
Right. So if you own the business and that business is not productive, you know, you either sell it to somebody who does it better or you bankrupt, business go bankrupt. And the bankruptcy, you know, the doors get closed, employees find the job somewhere else and, you know, and somebody else might come and rebuild it or whatever, right? But that's not the end of the world. Excuse me. But if the whole country go bankrupt, you cannot sell it. You cannot calculate the, you know, file the bankruptcy. You cannot do that. So how you fix the bankrupt country? There is only one way. You go back to capitalism. All the Eastern European countries are capitalist now, including Russia is capitalist, because that's only way to save the country. So what they did is because they confiscated everything from people when they come to the power. Somebody owned the factory. They took the factory. Somebody owned the farm. They took his farm. Somebody owned the whatever, you know, shoe repair shops. They took his shop. So then everything bankrupt, and now they start giving it back to the people. But problem was they were giving it back to the third generation. They took it from grandfather, and now they're giving it to their grandson. The grandson have no clue how to work the farm, right? They didn't even know that was their farm many times, you know, but now they have the farm, so they even have to learn how to work it, how to do it, or they sell it to somebody who knows how to do it. So that's what happened. So those countries are capitalists now. But they are not a totally free capitalism like America was, used to be. It's still, you know, it's capitalistic, but it's a little bit different than it is, but that was the only way to save the countries.
The book is Journey for Freedom by Peter Vedenka. If people want to get your book, where do they find it, Peter?
Well, it can be purchased on my website, which is also Journey for Freedom. My book is Amazon and Kindle also, but I have problem with Amazon for last 2 years. I cannot even talk about this. So if somebody ordered the book on Amazon, I don't even know if they get it. I actually have to go and order my own book to see if it's going to happen. I think the people sell the used books on Amazon. I think that can be bad, but buy the brand new book, I don't know if they get it. You would not believe what I went through. 2 years with Amazon, and I did not resolve the problem.
Might have something to do with the guy that owns Amazon.
Yes.
So if you want a copy of Peter's book, it's journeyforfreedom.com.
Yes.
Peter, thank you very much for sitting down with me.
Yes.
And we'll see you on the 7th.
Okay, David. Thank you very much.
If you'd like to meet Peter and get a copy of his book, he's going to be one of my guests at the Independence Network's launch party, which is being held October 7th in Sheridan. To get tickets, go to the website independencenetwork.us. Trust me, it's going to be a fantastic program that you won't long forget. Again, go to the website independencenetwork.us to get your tickets. They're on sale right now. Well, that'll do it for today's installment of Weekend Update. Have a good rest of your weekend, and we'll talk again on Monday during Morning Reload. As for me, I'm off to Casper to go see my pal Chad Prather. From the base of the Bighorns, at the Cowboys State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is the one and only Cowboys State Politics.